Go ahead, kid, jump. Suicide'll be nice and neat.
What if I don't?
The incinerator.
What about Aperture, Tom? They're gonna match up the portal with the gun.
Josh, I own Aperture. Besides, they couldn't match up the portal that killed Companion Cube.
You son of a...
I suppose it's poetic justice. Two companions with one portal gun.
Tom.
Josh.
What is your favorite Journey song?
Separate Ways, Worlds Apart, maybe?
Okay.
What about yours?
Okay. No, I'd probably do Separate Ways as well.
Mm-hmm.
One of the best scenes I think that's ever been used with that song in it is in Tron Legacy.
Hell yeah.
It's just so good. I wouldn't say Journey's such an underrated band, but come on.
I think they're great.
I know. They're not underrated at all.
No.
There's no way that they can ever be underrated.
No. Not at all.
I think Don't Stop Believing's a little too overrated.
I think it's just like, it's become their default song. So people, when they talk about it, they don't want to immediately be like, oh yeah, Don't Stop Believing. It's like, they have other singles. They have other very good singles.
It's really hard to go to a karaoke night and not have someone singing that song.
Mm.
Well, I'm like, oh, here we go. Great.
I mean, I'd rather hear somebody sing Don't Stop Believing a karaoke than Paradise by the Dashboard Lights. Because then I know, A, the stage is going to be hogged for 20 minutes, and B, they're going to do something they think is hilarious during the baseball sequence, and it's not going to be hilarious.
So I got a funny story about Paradise by the Dashboard Lights.
Go.
So we went to a Relay for Life back when I worked for a steakhouse,
mm-hmm.
which had delicious chicken Monterey, might I add.
Chicken at a steakhouse? What?
And me and my friend Matt were in line to do karaoke, and there was a couple in front of us, and it was a guy and a girl, and they're like, oh, we're gonna do a song that people aren't gonna expect to do. We're gonna do a song, and everyone's gonna think, oh, that's so creative. And they got up and they sang Summer Lovin', I think, or You're the One That I Want, one of the two songs from Grease.
Okay.
And everyone was like, oh, that's good. And then me and Matt get up there, and we have two microphones. And we do Paradise by the Dashboard Lights. He did all the girl parts, and I did all the Meatloaf parts.
And all those lives were saved at that relay.
That was it. Everyone was like they stood up, and there was like the slow clap.
Roll credits.
And with that, welcome to A Cast of the Past, where best friends get together to talk about old games in a new light. I'm Josh, and he's the Atlas to my Peabody.
It's Tom.
So, Tom.
Yeah.
This game that we're about to talk about, Portal 2,
mm-hmm.
falls, I think, in a category of such films like Terminator, Star Wars, Alien, Back to the Future,
mm-hmm.
where these movies were so good that they didn't need a sequel. And yet, the sequel comes out, and it just blows everybody away.
Yeah, I really like the examples you used, like how Star Wars The Force Awakens didn't really need a sequel, but The Last Jedi blew everyone away because it was so much better and so such a beautiful masterpiece.
I don't think that's the example I was using.
I mean, I don't know what else you could refer to.
I'm talking about Clone Wars.
Oh, that's right. That's
Attack
right.
of the Clones.
Clone Wars, the sequel to Attack of the Clones. Oh, God. No, this is actually far better than Clone Wars. But no, I agree with you. It's one of those things where it's like the sequel surprises everybody and it's somehow worth it.
Yeah, it's like I said, it's in one of those rare occasions. I mean, when Portal first came out, it was just this little small game that was hidden inside the orange box. And it was great. I think that was really the standout of the entire orange box itself.
I still think it's the greatest video game ever made.
Wow. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But when they announced that they were doing a Portal 2, it was like, I don't know how you can have lightning strike the same place twice.
Right.
But
right.
man, like it came in, and for a game that's just basically like a shooter puzzle, like there was such a story into this game. that was like, okay, like, I'm enjoying this. I remember I got it, I think, the day that it came out, and I, like, stayed up, like, all night trying to beat this. And I failed at that, but I did beat it later down the road.
Yeah, the story is a pretty heavy focus of this game. I got some stuff about that I could say, but do you want to do the nitty-gritty first, Josh?
Yeah, I did the nitty-gritty last week, Tom, so why don't you take it away this week?
Sounds good. So Portal 2 was developed by Valve and released in North America on the Xbox 360, PlayStation 3, and Windows and Mac on April 19th, 2011.
Don't forget Linux.
And the super popular, well-beloved platform, Linux. There you go. And it's a sequel, of course, to the 2007 game Portal.
Fantastic. Tremendous.
Mm-hmm.
10 out of 10.
Yeah.
I'd give it maybe. We'll talk about ratings then.
Sure. So, Josh, you said you got this day one.
Yes, I did. I loved the first game so much that I really needed to hop right back into this world because, man, that game was it was groundbreaking, like a first person shooter puzzle.
Mm-hmm.
Not really heard of.
Mm. Yeah, its mechanics are very interesting. The way that the portals were implemented had some great physics puzzles behind it. And it was this nice, snarky little, like, mystery story that you don't realize how interesting and dark it gets until it fully unfolds in front of you. And, yeah, like, Portal is just this immaculately paced, well-constructed game. It's a good idea built around an interesting little narrative. And, like I said at the start of the podcast, that's why I think it's the greatest video game ever made. It's a good idea, done well, and it doesn't overstay its welcome.
Yeah. You can beat the first one in, like, about 2 hours.
Yeah.
If you know what you're doing.
It's great.
So with this game being its own standalone, what did you think overall of the story of the game?
I think the story is not bad in its own right, but I'm going to just say up front, something that I dislike about Portal 2, and not that I, like, think this is a bad game, it's just that I see Portal 2 get called better than Portal 1, and I'm going to say up front, I do not think it's better than Portal 1 because the story overshadows the gameplay in a lot of sequences within this title, and I think that's a detriment to the experience.
Okay. Do you want to go into a little bit more detail on that?
Well, basically, so Portal, which, as we know and have discussed, it was released in 2007, and as you rightly pointed out, it was this surprise hit because it was put into the orange box without much fanfare. I think the backstory of it itself is that it was just kind of a side project that Valve included in the compilation. So it blew up in a way that I don't think Valve expected. And I'm sure you remember the culture of, like, Portal fans when that game came out. Everybody was like, hey, that cake's a lie. You know, like, you cannot escape references to the game. Oh, I'm going to Josh's birthday party today. I hope his cake isn't a lie. You know, like, but there's a point where you can run things into the ground. And, when Portal 2 came out, I think the first thing I just noticed about the game is, oh, they're really going all in on, like, how much they've expanded the lore, expanded the story. Whereas the first game, you open up in a sequence where you're exploring the mechanics and learning them. This game, it starts right out with, like, ooh, mystery, intrigue, plot, 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 you know? And as it unfolds, there's just points in the game where, like, the game will stop for you to have story thrust in your face, to the point where there's a puzzle, I think, at some point in the first act, that you don't even get to finish. Like, you start in the room, and you're walking around a bit, and then all the walls come up, and Gladys is there, and it's like, oh, hey, you thought you were doing a puzzle, but now I'm here for, you know, random narrative stuff. And it's like, oh, I wanted to do a puzzle. And it's just stuff like that that occurs throughout the game that I think makes this a little less special than Portal 1.
Mm-hmm. So, I love the first Portal game.
Mm.
I think what happened in this game was that they introduced too many different ideas. And that is what may have hindered it a little bit. Because when this came out, I loved this game. I was thinking, like, this game is so much better than the first one. There's no way that it, you know, you can think that all the changes they've made have gone and, you know, changed anyone's opinion. Playing through it again, like, I don't know.
So, Josh, when you say there was too much added, are you talking strictly to the story like I am, or are you talking about mechanics too?
I'm talking about the mechanics.
Oh,
I'm talking about the puzzles.
Mm-hmm.
when you got to the part with the gel, like the ooze type stuff.
Oh yeah, in the second act where they introduced gels that are made in the labs, and one gel allows you to jump higher if you apply it to certain surfaces, and the other one allows you to run faster.
And then the other one allows you to have white walls where you can actually use your portal gun for.
Yeah.
So the problem that I have with that is I've gone through, and I'm playing this really good story-driven puzzle game, and I'm about halfway through the game now, I would say, and they introduce another tutorial.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like, oh, I don't know if I want to feel like going back to the beginning pretty much to understand how this works. And then now you have to utilize this. I had so much fun just using the gun and getting from point A to point B, but now I have to use the gun to get this gel stuff all over the place. And it just took me out of the game a little bit.
Yeah.
And then you get even further towards the end, and then they introduce the tractor beam puzzles.
Mm.
And I'm like, oh my god, like now it's another one that you have to learn. And then it's the tractor beam with the gel, with the portal gun, and it's like, it's stacking it on top of each other. And I understand puzzle games end up doing that throughout the time, but with a game this big, and you wanting to actually kind of progress through with the story, it kind of starts to take you out of it a little bit. Because the puzzles do get a little bit harder as you keep going through, and it's just like, come on, like,
okay,
what are you doing?
Yeah, I think that's interesting how we each have a gripe in the opposite section of this game.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it would be interesting. You want to go over the single player campaign of this game just in brief so we can talk about things that we like or didn't like. And I think it would also kind of contextualize the pacing problems that we're both talking about. Would you be cool with that?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. You play as Shell from the first game, and you wake up in a stasis chamber. Resembling kind of like a hotel room, and it's like kind of walking around and everything looks normal and stuff like that. And then all of a sudden you kind of fall asleep.
Yep.
And then you wake back up, and then the hotel room that you're in is just completely destroyed and like dilapidated. And there's like forest, like overgrown inside of it and stuff like that. And then you hear a knock at the door, and you get introduced to one of the newest characters in the game, Wheatley, voiced by Mr. Stephen Merchant, which I absolutely loved him in this game.
Yep.
I only had one issue with him. How comes Wheatley didn't sound robotic like everything else in the game?
Yeah, like he had a little bit of a tint to it, but not the kind of like computer processor Windows voice,
yeah, like an
thing
auto-tune
that like GLaDOS has going,
or the robots or the other cores, stuff like that.
Yeah, it's like, I wonder if they were just be like, hey, we got Stephen Merchant, appreciate this, you know. But a very funny guy, co-creator of The Office, he's very good with like witty and naive and even kind of cringy humor, so very good performer for this character, which I like a lot.
Yep. So he helps you escape out of the test chambers that you're in.
Mm-hmm.
And then he gets to this like big open room, and he accidentally reactivates GLaDOS, which there's a song called Still Alive from the first game. And apparently GLaDOS is dead in this one. What the hell's up with that?
So we got to talk a little bit about the retconning, I guess, that they did to make Portal 2 a thing. So fans of Portal 1 will know that, like, at the end, when you defeat GLaDOS in the boss fight of that game, the room that you and GLaDOS are in kind of gets, like, sucked up into, like, this white void, and everything gets ripped piece from piece, GLaDOS especially, and Shell kind of, like, wakes up in a parking lot, and that's the end of Portal 1. It's just like, oh, is she out of the lab? Like, did she survive? Is she, like, dying or something? And that was the end of Portal 1. I legit do not believe for a second they planned for a Portal 2.
No, absolutely
However,
not.
So at some point, Portal got like a Game of the Year edition or some DLC or whatever. And part of that involved Portal getting a new ending, where when Shell is like in the parking lot after escaping, she lies there on the ground for a little bit. And then a little robot comes up and pulls her. And it's like, oh, I'm taking you to wherever, you know, like he's like, oh, Shell's being taken somewhere. What's going on? So that was like a tease that they retconned into Portal 1 to set up that there would be a sequel.
Huh.
So you talking about finding GLaDOS in this game. Yes, I know you're saying completely that, like, how is she like not active? What's going on? But look at something else. If you compare the character designs of GLaDOS between game 1 and game 2, she's gotten a complete like remodel. And I know that's probably the most nitpicky of nitpicky things I can say, but like she went from being ripped limb from limb to being completely assembled in this random room, you know, like it's like, wait a minute, that's not how the last game ended. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's the whole suspension of disbelief right now that we're kind of,
it's just curious, you know,
falling like, into. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But you actually defeat Gladys right at the beginning of the game, pretty mm-hmm. much. Mm-hmm. And then your little buddy Wheatley decides to turn on you.
He heel turns, yeah, right away.
Pretty much takes over the facility, and he realizes that the power that Gladys had, he can use it towards, you know, testing specimens. And you're the only thing that's around the test.
Mm-hmm.
So it was kind of a nice little swerve there that you usually see in a second act of a movie, like such hits like X-Men 2, X-Men United, you know what I mean? Like where Magneto decides to join the X-Men. It's just kind of like...
face turn, yeah.
You never expect that, like, oh, maybe the villain from the first game is going to be my best friend in this one. But yeah, Gladys gets shoved into a potato.
Yes. And so, yeah, the end of Act 1, beginning of Act 2 finds you thrown out of the lab, down into the catacombs of what Aperture Science Laboratories used to be. So you're paired up, like you said, with GLaDOS, who's kind of like attached to your gun now in the form of a talking potato. And the two of you are trying to navigate the old lab to get up to the new lab to stop Wheatley because he's going mad with power.
Yeah. And I want to say one thing, because I want to dive into it a little bit here, is the sound design to this game.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't realize it till playing through it again, but did you notice that when you get closer to finishing a puzzle in the game, the music starts to pick up even more, like, so you know that you're actually doing something right?
I think it's a subtle thing I may not have like been paying a ton of attention to, but it's a pretty helpful and ingenious way of like guiding the player along.
Yeah, it was very similar, like when we talked about Limbo, when you got stuck at a puzzle, mm-hmm. every now and then there would be a butterfly that would kind of flap its wings and like fly towards the area that you need to go to, so you knew which the direction that you had to go to finish that puzzle. And I just thought it was kind of nice that these games kind of add these little pieces in there, so you're like, I'm lost, but I'm not really.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, it's very neat, very neat. I agree.
But coming up through the old Aperture Science buildings, you run into audio recordings of the Aperture Science founder, Cave Johnson.
Voiced by Oscar winner / the greatest newspaper man in all of comic book history, J.K. Simmons.
Yep. The greatest J. Jonah Jameson.
The only J. Jonah Jameson. Do not recast him. You will fail.
What do you think of Cave Johnson, Tom?
I think Cave Johnson's dialogue is some of the most hilariously written lines in gaming history. I think the lore of like Aperture and discovering how he created it and what he did to push it and everything and how he ultimately met his demise, super interesting. But again, it's just, there's points of it where it's just not that well integrated with the gameplay. You know what I mean? Like, it's not gameplay and narrative going hand in hand. It's like, you solved a puzzle, now chill out for a bit while some funny recordings play out and you're not really doing much except like walking around until they're over. You know what mm-hmm. I'm saying? Like it's this awkward marriage of two things I love. They're just not living together very well.
Yeah. I loved everything that Cave Johnson did.
Mm-hmm.
J.K. Simmons' portrayal of him, he was just a lovable character. It did seem like you were kind of walking into one meme into another though, which I'm okay with that. It's adding the comedic relief to this game. The game is a comedy.
Mm-hmm.
Everything from Wheatley, even Gladys, like for being a big villain, Gladys is like hilarious at the same time.
So besides like the lemon joke, which is arguably like one of the most legendary lines from Cave Johnson in the game, what other like gags did you notice?
Oh, I love the Manus people.
Oh, okay. I forgot. Yes. Yes. Very good.
But with these recordings too, you're also introduced to the last character in the game as well, which is Caroline.
Mm-hmm.
She's kind of a ditzy little secretary assistant to Cave Johnson.
Yep. And through audio recordings, you kind of find out that Cave Johnson liked her so much that he wanted her to be the basis of this artificial intelligence he was creating. And then he took it a step further and kind of without Caroline's consent, forced her consciousness into his system and thus created GLaDOS. Mm-hmm. So we're kind of getting an origin story for our old villain while trying to stop the new villain.
So what do you think of that? Did you like that they gave an origin story to Gladys?
I don't think I do.
Okay.
I'm not saying it's bad or badly constructed or even like that it has like bad logic to it. It's just like GLaDOS didn't need a backstory, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. It was
so,
you know.
I liked it. Mm-hmm. And the reason I liked it is because it made you care a little bit more for GLaDOS, realizing, mm-hmm. yes, she's a horrible machine, but at the same time, there's a person in there. And as you're hearing Caroline talking, GLaDOS in the game is reacting to her voice. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of like, she's like, "That, why does that voice sound so familiar? And what's going on?" Like, and then she starts repeating some of the things that Caroline's saying. And then like, as you're getting closer to the end of the game, she's starting to realize that she is Caroline. And I like that. Like, it was one of those things that's like, you get all the way up there and then her whole demeanor kind of changes and she's a different being because she realizes that there's a human inside of her.
Mm-hmm. No, you're right. This game puts a heavy emphasis on kind of like the arc of GLaDOS and like the evolution of GLaDOS. If I can kind of expand upon something that I think just bugs me about it, it's that, so in Portal 1, the kind of just gag with GLaDOS is that she's this omnipotent control freak AI whose only goal is to just test human abilities to the furthest extent that she can. So like the gag is just like, you know, it's humans versus machines. GLaDOS will constantly make jokes about how Shell's just like this disposable fleshy human and like her superiority because she's like, you know, a digital being and stuff like that. That's the gag there. Mm-hmm. In Portal 2, the kind of story that we end up with at the end is like this story about GLaDOS learning that Shell is her friend, not her enemy. Like, that's, like, you know, kind of what we get in the big finale, not trying to jump ahead, but, like, it's GLaDOS, like, being thankful to Shell and setting her free and everything. So, what I think makes that not fully work, and why I think, ultimately, like, giving GLaDOS a backstory and everything is bad, is because Shell doesn't get as equal of a backstory. You know what I mean? If, mm-hmm. if anything, like, Shell's still a blank slate with a name, and I know you could probably...
A typical first-person shooter character.
Well, right. And I know you can make the argument like, oh, she's just supposed to be a stand-in for the main character. But at the same time, it's like, if this is a story about a budding friendship, you know, like two enemies learning more about each other and thus becoming friends, you have to give the other half of that dynamic some kind of interesting backstory to be appealing, or else it's just a one-sided thing. And that's kind of why GLaDOS having a backstory doesn't make a ton of sense to me.
Mm-hmm. So... I know that there was a bunch of like rumors going around about this. Do you believe anything that Shell might be GLaDOS's daughter or Caroline's daughter?
I don't know. Is that like stuff that people have kind of scrubbed up on their own, or is there legitimate
findings in the game?
Yeah,
that's a lot of like fan. No, it's a lot of fan theory stuff. But I know people would always say like, oh, well, you know. It's probably because of this. And like, I know that's one thing that's always been tossed around is that Shell is Caroline's daughter, and that's why she's stuck at the laboratory. But
Yeah, I don't know. I have fan theorized in my day, but in recent years I've kind of really leaned back just to avoid disappointing myself and said, like, if it's not in the published work, I don't put a lot of stock into it. So I don't know. If they ever make Portal 3 and confirm that, all right, then sure. But for right now, I don't know. I don't see a ton that enforces that. Do you?
No.
No?
No, it's just one of those things. I just like it for what it is.
So we're still in the old labs. And like the further you rise up, you're seeing in like the design of the game, the art style, the production design, you're seeing like how Aperture evolved from like a retro 1950s kind of retro futuristic science laboratory through the 70s and the 80s. And how, like, the aesthetics of the lab changes and it becomes more suitable to whatever that decade was as you're going up. So the point where I think you're reaching, like, what the lab was in the 80s is where the game, as you said, throws a whole new set of mechanics on you. Mm-hmm. And in terms of like pacing, this is like, oh, this is at least like the 60-70% mark. You know what I mean? Like, you should be in the home stretch. And if you want to break it down, as you said, you kind of have to start a new tutorial section.
Yeah, when you have to use different colored like gels, like substance, and kind of throw or paint, I would say, across the floor and the walls and stuff like that, so you can run faster or jump and kind of give yourself a little bit of a bounce or like an extra jump or something like that. And yes, it's creative and stuff like that, but man, does it really just take you out of the mood for what everything you've just came from.
Mm-hmm. So do you remember off the top of your head what each color represented? I know you said white is like the surface that allows portals to be attached to.
Yep. Blue mm-hmm. was the bounce, and then the orange was the like speed. You can okay. actually like run a little bit faster.
Okay. Yeah, I remember a lot of those puzzles being very challenging because I was trying to get a handle on incorporating these new elements into the basic portal skills, you know?
Yeah, and that's the thing. You went and you just played hours of like gameplay that's very similar to the original and doing different things from it. And then they're like, hey, you know what? Now let's add more stuff to it. And you're like, oh my God, I just can't even right now.
So, you get up to the top floor of the lab, and Wheatley has redecorated the whole place.
Yeah. So it's setting you up for the final battle there against Wheatley, trying to get him out of the system so you can put Gladys back into the system. What did you go into in a final confrontation with him where you have to attach like corrupted personality cores to Wheatley so he starts to kind of malfunction a little bit, all voiced by the wonderful Nolan North. So as you're continuing to attach these personality cores to him and kind of starts to like hack into him, Wheatley decides to just start blowing up the lab with you inside of it.
Yep. If he's going down, he's taking you with him.
Yeah, which as he pretty much knocks you down on the ground, you realize that there's really nowhere else for you to go, nothing you can do, and you have one last resort to make a portal. And it's probably one of the most creative things I've seen in a video game at that time that I was like, oh my God, like I lost my shit.
Well, yeah, it's a very think outside the box moment where paying attention to like some of the details that they've thrown at you pays off. You know what I mean?
Look for a white surface.
Mm-hmm. Look up through the destroyed ceiling. Hey, there's the moon. Oh.
Yeah, you see the moon and it's in the same color, white, grayish surface that everything else is. And then you just pull the trigger. And I just like how it's, you just see it go and then a little twinkle on the moon.
Mm-hmm.
And then just everything just starts going crazy.
You're getting sucked through the vacuum of space.
Yeah. As you go out, you're grabbing onto Wheatley, and he's trying to knock you loose and stuff like that. But Gladys actually knocks him loose from the machine, and she grabs you and pulls you back through the portal, which leaves Wheatley out in space now orbiting. Now, one thing about the moon I was a little confused about.
Mm-hmm.
Why is the moon landing stuff on the moon still?
I think that was put there for them to be like, we need the audience to understand that the portal opened up to the moon, like Earth's moon.
You know it's kind of like holding your hand, like letting you know, this is the moon.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember this thing?
I think that's exactly why they did it.
But as you go back in there, Gladys takes over the entire laboratory and says that she's learned a valuable lesson about humanity and all this stuff with the parts of Caroline. And then all of a sudden, the personality traits for Caroline get deleted out of her system, and Gladys is back to being her normal, ruthless self. And I was like, I liked how they brought it back around.
Mm-hmm.
So, but then Gladys decides that Shell is not worth the trouble and releases her out into the open.
Yep. Sets her free from Aperture. And I love the logic of just like, yeah, you're such a pain in the neck. I don't want you around here anymore.
Yeah.
You've caused too much crap.
Yeah. But other than that, that's pretty much your story from beginning to end.
Mm-hmm.
You take a little bit of an elevator back up to the surface to...
Probably the best elevator ride in the history of ever.
And why is that?
Oh, because we get this beautiful, like, operatic little music piece sung by all of the turret bots, like, bidding you goodbye as they all, like, just arrange themselves and sing. And I mean, the turrets are my boys. They're probably my favorite characters in this game, and having them like send you off a little song was just great. I loved it.
But when you get to the top of the elevator, you go out and you're kind of in like a this like wheat field, like deserty kind of style thing. Mm-hmm. But it's nice, like you just are like pop up outside of a metal shed. Like, just, like, this shed out in the middle of nowhere has all of this stuff underneath them.
Well, it's super secret, you know?
Yeah, yeah. But when you exit out there, you have a little buddy waiting for you. You have one of your little companion cubes.
Yep.
It's the same one, apparently, that was destroyed in the first game.
I mean, it's covered in burn marks, so I mean, you just have to assume that. So, that's the top to bottom of the single-player campaign. Do you want to talk about the co-op campaign at all? Because that was a huge selling point of this.
I haven't dipped too much into the co-op campaign, so if you have, I would like to hear your thoughts on that, Mr. Tom.
I've played through it once. I played it with my roommate in college when we got the game, and it's very fun. It's not in any way story-focused, which makes it a little bit more comparable to the first Portal, in my opinion, but you play as two Aperture testing robots, Atlas and Peabody, under the guidance of GLaDOS, and she puts you just through a series of tests. And you have to use each character's portal gun to solve intricate puzzles based on two players. And it, at some points, can be maddening. You know, it incorporates all the mechanics from the game. And it just kind of leaves you to your own devices. It's like, all right, work together. And it can bring out the best in you sometimes. And if you get lost together, it can also just see both of you crumbling into a pile of frustration, as what happened to me. But it was a lot of fun, and I thought, like, it's another example of Valve kind of defying expectations. It's like, this is a game that doesn't need a sequel. Okay, they delivered a pretty decent sequel. This is a game that could not possibly be multiplayer. Here's a pretty great multiplayer version, you know? So it's something. I think it's pretty exceptional.
It kind of adds a little bit more, and it's kind of like a harder mode for Portal.
Mm-hmm.
But that's awesome. That's awesome. I love the characters, Atlas and Peabody, but I just never had the ability to kind of sit down. And like I said in the past, one thing I don't like to do is usually play games with people.
You're very antisocial.
Yeah. So I always felt like it was a missed opportunity.
It's why we record this podcast from separate houses 2 hours apart.
Yes,
they can't be the same room as me.
Nope. So with this game, it got pretty good reception.
Oh yes, very good.
Yeah, I think you're looking at a lot of like 9s out of 10s, 10 out of 10s, 9.5s. I think like G4 gave it a 5 out of 5. IGN gave it a 9.5 out of 10. OneUp.com gave it an A+. So I mean, that's saying something.
Yeah, I mean,
it's like an A+.
Yeah, like, it's still a well-designed, well-made game. It takes you back to, like, this familiar and popular world, and, you know, sequences of it are just downright amazing and stuff you don't see. So I'm not surprised it got, you know, the acclaim it did. The game also sold very well. By 2012, a little over a year after its release, it had sold more than 4 million copies. So, you know, I can only imagine what that's increased to in the years since, on especially with its lifespan on PCs. You know, there's a heavy modding community for it that I'm aware of. So yeah, this game has had a lot of longevity that I'm not surprised about at all.
But with the reception and the sales also came the awards. And man, this game got a lot of awards. But most notably in 2011, it received 12 nominations at the Spike Video Game Awards. It was the most nominated title. It was also nominated for Game of the Year, but it won for Best PC Game, Best Male Performance, Best Female Performance, Best Downloadable Content, and Best Multiplayer Game. So that's crazy.
Isn't it crazy to think that, like, at one point, Spike TV was, like, the Oscars of video game awards? Well,
yeah.
I mean, in terms of public visibility, I guess you could say, like, Developers Choice Awards or DICE or something. Like, I know there's like industry award circuits, but that was kind of like the awards face for the public.
Yeah. I mean, it still is. The video game awards are still going on now. Jeff Keighley has been making them, you know, get bigger and bigger each year. And I still look forward to it.
So I didn't actually know that. So the video game awards, that current body, that's a descendant of the Spike Game Awards?
Yeah, so the Spike Video Game Awards, the reason it was the Spike Video Game Awards was because it was on Spike TV.
Yeah.
But it's the same thing.
Oh. I didn't know it had like the same lineage. So that's interesting. Okay. I just, I gotta say, like, I watched the very first broadcast of the Spike Video Game Awards, and it was one of those moments where stuff happened that made me embarrassed to like video games. So I'm watching it, and in the pre-show, it's like Jamie Kennedy's on the red carpet, and he's there with like some random like nerd in the crowd. And they made sure to find like the nerdiest nerd you could possibly find, and he's like, oh, we're gonna like have you call a playmate on this virgin phone and maybe you'll lose your virginity. And like, I think like my dad walked through the room like the moment that was on screen and like kind of just like gave this look at the TV like, what is this? And I was like, oh, like I want to evaporate right yeah. now.
Yeah,
I don't know. So there, I've always had this kind of thing with the Spike Awards. It was like, oh, I don't know.
So a couple closing comments here, or conversation pieces I would like to ask Tom.
Go.
Still alive or once you gone?
Still alive.
Really?
Although, yeah, because still it's like my argument is just kind of founded in the same logic that I'm approaching this game in its entirety, in that I think, you know, the only reason that there's a song at the end of Portal 2 is because it's like, oh, we did a song at the end of Portal 1, so we got to have a song. It's the same kind of like, you know, if there has to be a sequel, there has to be X, Y, and Z throughout this game. And like, I Just Want You Gone is great. It's very delightful and fun, and I like it a lot, but Still Life is just better because it set such a huge bar that even though Want You Gone came close, I don't think it cleared it.
See, I think Want You Gone is a much better song overall, and okay. it also won an award at the Game Award Network Guild for Best Original Vocals Pop.
Huh. Like, I'm not going to deny it. Like, it's award-worthy. It's good. What about it over Stay Alive do you specifically like?
I just like it as a whole song. I think listening...
Like you could listen to it separately?
Exactly, yeah. I mean, Still Alive is a great video game song, but I think Want You Gone is a great song. I mean, Still Alive was in Rock Band, and it's pretty fun to play in there. But yeah, I think if you're looking at just like best like musical... like number, I think Want You Gone is a much better song than Still Alive.
Okay.
The second thing I have for you, Tom, do you think we're going to see a Portal 3?
I think Gabe Newell can't count to three, and I don't think we're ever going to see a Portal 3 or a Half-Life 3. So no.
No Left 4 Dead 3?
Nope.
That's sad.
Yeah, it is, but I don't know. They're just afraid of success and money, so it's never going to happen.
Yeah.
Hey, be grateful Kingdom Hearts 3 is actually coming out.
So, Tom, do you think people need to play Portal 2?
Yes. I think it is an excellent game, like one of the best ever produced. It's a ton of fun. There is a lot of enjoyment to be had if you're playing alone or with a friend. It's very inventive and creative, funny, and a great time. I am just not going to stand for the argument it's better than the first game, which is a masterpiece.
Okay. I understand your mentality there. It has a 95% on Metacritic.
That's fine. That's fine. But it's like...
You know those Metacritic scores to PC game nerds means the world.
All right. I'm going to lay this down, and this is probably going to either end our friendship or I don't know. But all right. My line of logic between Portal 1 and Portal 2 is my same line of logic between Back to the Future 1 and Back to the Future 2. And it's just that Back to the Future 1 is just one of the tightest, most inventive, most well-made, on-point movies ever produced. It's got what many consider to be an immaculate screenplay. There's not a single moment wasted. Everything that's introduced has a payoff. Nothing is ever like unexplained. Every character who's got like clear goals and motivations, and the whole movie's put together from that little blueprint beautifully. You know, it's funny. It's well paced. The special effects are great. The performances are awesome. It's a perfect top to bottom movie. And as like you said at the beginning, when you compared it, it's like this. No one expected this would actually get a sequel. There was just kind of the implication that there would be further adventures, you know. And then it got a sequel, and it's everything that you want more of, you know what I mean? Because it's already good to begin with. It's more of a great thing. But I don't think it's as good as the first one, because the first one was, like you said, lightning in a bottle. It's like, you could have left it alone and it would have been fine. Everyone would still have remembered it for all time. Even though you got a sequel, which is great, it's still good, but you didn't need it. What about you, Josh? What's your take on?
I think you should definitely play it. Mm-hmm. Now, where you think that Portal 1 is this masterpiece, I don't think Portal 2 is a masterpiece. I do believe Portal 1 is up there in that top tier of games.
Okay.
For when it came out, for what it did, it was, like we said, lightning in a bottle. For Portal 2, I love the story to it. I love the characters to the game. I think it's just overall a better story and it's more intriguing. You do have the issues when you get later into the game with the different puzzles coming in and kind of resurfacing and trying to train your brain into doing something that probably don't want to do anymore. But
okay.
I think this is just a much better game than the first one, just because it has that added story to it. Because I do play games for their story. And going through the old Aperture Science laboratories and just seeing kind of the origin to how, you know, the moon dust, you know, how that was able to create the paint that you can use in the game, and how that was kind of Cave Johnson's demise, and seeing mm-hmm. how Gladys used to be this ditzy assistant and how she turned into this ruthless machine that had a change of heart towards the end and then back in. How Wheatley was your friend throughout the whole beginning of the game and he starts to slowly turn because he gets power. Like, there's a lot of twists and turns in this game, and I think it was very well done. Very well scripted for a game that really didn't need to be made. Like, they went ahead and they were like, listen, like, we're going to do this and see what happens. And I think for a gamble, it has a great payoff.
I can't deny that line of logic. You're absolutely right. It's the biggest surprise success that I'm sure a lot of people were cynical about. And, you know, it's just everything you said. Yeah, like, the lore is good. Like, even though I don't personally like how it was implemented, everything about the new additions are really exciting and interesting and, like, cool to explore. I mean, I'd be a liar if I said I haven't gone back on YouTube and listened to compilations of Cave Johnson quotes, you know, from time to time in the years. It's a lot of good stuff.
I know the way that me and you think about these two games here is the way that we think about two games in another franchise, and that's the Arkham series. I know you absolutely love Arkham Asylum, and I'm more of an Arkham City guy.
Yeah.
And it's because, and I think it's the whole, like we said, lightning in a bottle compared to you don't need to make a sequel, but you did anyway. Mm-hmm. And you've exceeded all expectations. But yeah, other than that, pick up Portal 2 and Portal 1. Buy both of them.
Absolutely should.
If you already have them, buy them again.
Mm-hmm.
Gabe needs your money. He's running low. Well, that's all the time that we can spend in the past, so thanks for listening. Subscribe to A Cast of the Past on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. And stay up to date with A Cast of the Past by making sure you follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. There you can be the first to know when new episodes drop, as well as joining in on discussions on all things gaming. And until next time, we'll see you in the future. The cake is a lie, people.